it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Austin Booker, Al, can he play? Do you like the pick? Can he have an impact on this defense? I'll jump right to the fifth round pick.
All right. Yeah, I like him a lot. You know, I was watching some tape on him. I've seen a lot on him. But there's a couple things that really stand out to me, you know, especially being an edge rusher. One is, you know, obviously, what's obvious is his hand usage, you know, and he's got a lot of different moves in there. He's got some skills, number one. Number two, he's relentless. You can see in his attitude, he's just getting after people. And number three, and I know this is interesting to talk about this, his bend. I can tell his bend by the way he tackles. When he hits people, he hits them in the waist or in the chest. He doesn't hit people high. And for a big, tall guy to get down like that, and I mean, he sticks people too. I mean, he brings it. So that means he's got, I remember Bill Parcells in years ago talking about, you know, you want puppies that bite, talking about rookies that have a little bit of a nasty attitude. And he really brings the thunder for someone 240 pounds. So I'm looking at him. I came in as a rookie. I was 240. Richard Dent came in, he was 225. So I think people shouldn't get so caught up in the weight right now. He might be more relegated to a specialty type of thing coming in like on the third and long, you know, 10 plus. Special teams he should be very good at. And Steve McMichaels, you know what he was? He was a special teams guy when he first came to the Bears. He was run down on kickoffs. You know, I could think of a lot of other guys. Jay Hilgenberg, he was a long snapper. So, you know, when you get these kind of picks, the lower picks, they can still do a lot for you.
And look, the guy, you know, he's 6'6". I mean, this is not somebody that couldn't put on weight. So let's talk about that process. He's in the NFL. He's eating the best food. He's got the best training. Not that they're slacking at Kansas. I mean, that's in essence, all the, you know, these are all NFL programs at this point. But learning to play with more weight on you, being comfortable. What was that like for you, Al? How do you think that, how big of a challenge is that?
Well, you know, the first year I came in, I was 240, soaking wet. And I had problems to get some of the bigger linemen when it was straight up, you know, them coming at me in the running game. But the following season, you have to remember, they're still growing. Their bodies are still transitioning at this age. You know, when you're 21, 22 years old, your body's still forming to be a man, your bone structure and everything, your musculature, all that. So most defensive linemen and offensive linemen, they kind of have a bit of a struggle their first year because they're going against grown men whose bodies have been matured and everything. So I would expect somewhat the same from him, but I just love the skills. I love the heart that he seems to have. And like I said, he has a really good bend. You can really tell that he can get underneath there. And what I've heard is the Bears' new defensive line coach is a heck of a coach from Buffalo. And so he'll have him. He'll have Montez Sweat there. See, when Dan Hampton and I came, who did we have? We had Tommy Hart, who was a Pro Bowler. He was in his last year, but he was a Pro Bowler of the 49ers, great pass rusher. We had Alan Page, who everybody knows who Alan Page is, a Hall of Famer. We had Jim Osborne, who was a 10, 11-year pro. We had all these guys teaching young guys like me and Dan Hampton and later on Steve McMichaels. So when you have those that kind of experience, that makes the adjustment a lot easier for a younger guy.
And, I mean, Al, you and Hamp came in 79, right? Mm-hmm. And you didn't think the Bears were taking you. You basically had no inclination that you were coming to Chicago, correct?
Well, I did. I, I, I think I don't know if I remember telling you this the last time. Thank goodness I wasn't on YouTube now or the social media.
You didn't want to come. That's how I misremembered.
I didn't want to come at first because the Bears weren't very good, and they had a very old facility. They were building Lake Forest, and their facility was, I'm just going to be honest with you, it was garbage. And I came in there. I was like, wow, losing team, cold city, garbage facility. I don't want to come here, but I was very immature. I'm so glad the Bears picked me, you know, and thank goodness that Finks didn't listen to me. So I'm very glad that they picked me. Obviously, it worked out great for me.
Yeah.
I would have been the controversial guy, man. I would have been all over all the talk shows. Thank God that wasn't there. And then I was just a very immature kid.
Yeah. Well, and Hamp was picked fourth overall. And you were ninth overall. So in the Roma Dunze slot, we could fast forward to the Bears draft this year. And we were talking before the draft, and you were hoping they would take a wide receiver, and you basically were like, it depends on your flavor is what you like. So I'm assuming that you were quite happy with the Bears sticking wide receiver and going with Rome.
Absolutely. Here's why. I'm not just thinking about receivers from the standpoint. You have Keenan Allen, who's a Pro Bowler, but he's older and he's had some injury history, right? You don't want them to be an injury away from having a reduced receiving room because Mooney's not there now, right? So, you know, you bring in Roma Dunze. Now you got, you know, three really good receivers, and you want to stagger your receiving room. What I mean by that is stagger is you want to be able to pay two receivers. Like the Eagles, they just paid both of their wide receivers. Cost them a lot of money, right? When you look in this situation, they don't have to offer Keenan Allen a salary next year. They can let him go, and they can re-sign DJ Moore, right? Because they'll have the extra money, and they have Odunze. So they'll have two really good receivers if they want. I mean, they still could sign Keenan Allen. I'm not saying they shouldn't. But it gives them more options to play with their salary cap. They can pick up guys maybe in the middle of the season or in the next offseason, maybe a top defensive free agents out there. So it gives them a lot of flexibility in the salary cap. And it gives Caleb Williams, to me, it gives them two good receivers for at least 5 years.
Yeah.
So I think it's a great move.
The talent, aside from the Keenan Allen, the salary part aside, what do you like about Rome the most, Al?
Man, he's just mature beyond his years as far as a receiver. You could just tell. One of the things that just really sticks out to me when he has slow hands, you know, like he'll delay his hands before he catches the ball, which really fakes out the DB. Mike Haynes is a very good friend of mine. The first time I ever heard of this was through him, and he was a Hall of Famer from the Raiders. And he said one of the toughest guys to cover was a guy named Roger Carr. Now, this is taking us way back. He played for the Colts receiver, and he said one of the reasons is that he wouldn't bring his hands up to the very last second. So it was very difficult for him to play the ball when his back was to the quarterback. So I love that about Rome. Obviously, he's got the height. And here's the other thing I want to tell people, too. Guys get faster the first couple years after they get in the league because their body's still maturing. I mean, when I came in the league, I ran a 4.62, and then by my third year, I ran a 4.5. So just because Odunze might have ran, you know, whatever he ran last year and people didn't see him pulling away, doesn't mean he's not faster this year or the next year. And so that's the thing I look at. Here's this big body receiver. And here's the other thing I want to bring up that's very important. I don't think a lot of people think about. He's going to help in the running game. Think about the size of the receivers they have now in the running game. The running game, especially if you're trying to attack that edge, you saw some of the problems we had the last couple of years. You know, Claypool didn't want to block. We had undersized receivers who couldn't block. Now you got some guys that can block on the edge. So you got Sweat, you know, you got all the other running backs that can hit that edge. And what that does is going to bring a safety up. That's when you can hit up top. And another thing I wanted to share, too, and I know we're getting away from this.
It's okay.
I really love the Bears with the, you know, the two tight end, you know, 12, 13 personnel that they're running. Did you notice this year that the running backs went really fast in free agency?
It was a huge run. Like, yep.
It was fast. Remember the year before, they all sat there, right? They had to wait. Why do you think that happened? You want to know why it happened? Because of Detroit and Green Bay. If you saw what Detroit and Green Bay did in the playoffs, what did they do? They ran, who is it? That Green Bay ran Dallas into the turf, right?
It's true.
Then they, you know, both of them almost beat San Fran. San Fran got out of there barely, and they were running the football. And then they were hitting big passes down the field. See, people don't understand is to get big plays, you have to be balanced. Because if you're just back there throwing all the time, people can play. I mean, you score against bad teams. That's why Miami had a lot of problems. Miami would kill the bad teams, but when they played against the good teams, they struggled because the good teams had a defense that wouldn't let them get off like they did. So you need balance. You need a good running game as well as a passing game. And I love the fact that they got big receivers that can block on the edge because it's going to give them some chances downfield because somebody's going to bring the safety up, especially everybody's playing nickel, right? You got most of these – I think they played nickel, what, 60, 70% of the time, nickel dime?
Close enough, so, yeah.
Yeah, so if you're the Bears, especially if you come out with two tights and you got two tight ends like Everett and Clement that can get downfield, that are physical runners, that are big guys, that can block on a nickel, man, that creates a lot of opportunities. And that's why I think people are, they're so focused on the passing game. You also have to focus on the running game, what these receivers can do.
So it's interesting that you brought up balance because I was yelling about this yesterday, Al, and it sounds, and you definitely don't agree with me, which is fun. So give me a second. And let me tell you about Family Farms. Their culinary journey is woven with passion, dedication, and commitment to crafting the finest bacon-wrapped chicken, a timeless delicacy. It's tantalized the taste buds since 1974, 5 years before Al was drafted by the Bears. At Family Farms, they're more than just a traditional name. They've evolved into the purveyors of gourmet delights with their signature bacon-wrapped chicken leading the way. The tradition continues. Now you can find Family Farms bacon-wrapped chicken even easier. Look for us in the meat department at your local Woodman's and Mariano's. Craving a taste of home without leaving yours? Thrilled to announce the arrival on the Amazon Marketplace as well. Experience the flavor. Great way to support the show. Family Farms is awesome. They become a family favorite for generations. Visit your nearest Woodman's or Mariano's or visit their new Amazon Marketplace store today. And when you're doing your gambling, you know you got to do it at Circa, putting the money in your pocket with a minus 110 splits. They don't try to limit players based on their winnings. You're a big-time player. You come in, you take all the money. Circa feels oh so good about that. They love you. Real people behind the Circa Sports brand, who you meet, by the way, when you come out to our events. Download the Circa Sports Illinois app at circasports.com/Illinois-app. Sign yourself up today. Be on the lookout for Circa events, watch parties, tailgates. And yes, if someone you know has a problem gambling, call 1-800-GAMBLER or text GAMB to 833-234 or visit areyoureallywinning.com. All right, I'm not taking anything off the table for the Bears at 24, Al. Super Bowl or bust, go ahead. Like, that's fine. But, you know, making the playoffs seems like a more fair goal. But I want to see the QB develop rapidly. So if they come out with quote unquote balance, as you're saying, versus like if they have 50 plays in a game, I'd like to see Caleb throw it 35 times. Is that enough balance for you?
Okay, let's slow your roll a little bit. Okay, first of all, let's consider the facts.
Okay.
We have a new offensive coordinator, right?
Yep.
We have a whole bunch of new personnel.
Okay.
Historically, in training camp, the defense normally gets going before the offense because you don't have to coordinate nearly as many things together. It's a lot more reactionary for the defense than it is for the offense. I would caution everyone, you know, the first quarter of the season, the first four games, don't expect them coming out scoring 25, 30 a game. Because think about all the people they have to integrate in there. You got a new quarterback, right? You got a new offensive system. The whole team has to learn the offensive system, not just the quarterback, not just the receiver. So, and you got to get used to working the timing and everything together. And so I would caution the first quarter of the season, you know, give them a break. Hopefully the defense will play it tough. You know, don't expect a lot of big things the first quarter of the season. If they do, I'd be hallelujahing with you. But right now, I wouldn't expect that because it's going to take time. You just don't do that overnight. You're playing in the National Football League, and you got a new coordinator who's got to learn how to use all those weapons. I mean, think about that. Think about if you had that many weapons, how to use them, how to keep them happy, how to keep them involved. That's going to take some time. So I would say the first quarter of the season, the first three or four games, you know, give them a chance to adjust, and then we'll see what happens from that point on.
All right, and you speak logically here. Like, it's, I get it. Run, let's walk before you run. Let's let him get his feet on the ground. Expectations are going to be through the roof. People like Harm on up are going to be, although who's above me in this media landscape? I mean, really, but you know, people are going to be putting a lot, on him, and to lower that, I get it, makes sense. We're thinking about the long term. We're not thinking about the short term. We don't have to do this overnight. As he shows himself to be comfortable with the offense, you can build more in. That all makes sense. Fine. By the end of the season, though, Al, let's throw the football. How about that? Can we go there?
Yes. I think they'll probably do something like a 60-40 mix of throwing versus running, probably. But again, if you want to win the championship, you have to be balanced. There's no way you're going to win a championship. When I look back, and then let me kind of take you back, because I know you were a fan of back there in the 80s. I'm going to mention a few teams. Houston Oilers, when they went to the playoffs, Earl Campbell was killing people. They got knocked out in the first round. Why? Because they had no passing game. Dan Marino, I mean, what was he throwing for? Almost 5,000 yards with Duper and Clayton and all those boys? He never won a Super Bowl. You look at any team that's dominant on just one side of the ball, even the 49ers, everybody thinks about Joe Montana. They had Roger Craig in there running for 1,000 yards. They had Wendell Tyler running. They had a really good running game. You know, Dallas Cowboys, they had a dynasty in the 90s. They had very good balance. Even the Chiefs, as much as everyone talks about Patrick Mahomes, I think in two to three Super Bowls they won, there could have been an argument for the running back being MVP.
It's fair.
I mean, they're running backs. They had a couple. There's a kid named Williams they make in their first Super Bowl. He was tearing it up. He was the star of the show. So don't get me wrong. Patrick Mahomes is the best player in the league. But you just can't do it with a one, you know, just throwing the ball. You have to be balanced because that gives you the shots. That gives you the opportunity, you know, to get those big plays. You know, it gives you the opportunity to have those deep shots to Odunze and DJ Moore and all those guys. But if you're sitting there passing, they can just go back and zone you out and you know, get you with four if they got a really good pass rush.
Yeah, it's interesting that you go back in time and you know, and my first thought was like, well, that's not relevant to today, Al Harris, is they're playing the football game differently. But you backed it up well, you know, with an underlining of KC and how that has gone down. Look, you're not going to do it without a great quarterback, but you're not going to do it with just a great QB. I get it. Let's go back to the D-line here and back to last year specifically. Did you see anything that you really liked about Gervon Dexter Sr.?
Yes. At least
you did. Let me hear what you think his potential is.
Oh, my goodness. He's a big, powerful man, long arms. You know what he reminds me of? And he's not as polished as him yet. Remember when Akeem Hicks was killing people for the Bears?
Mm-hmm.
He kind of reminds me of that big, huge, long body kind of guy. The thing I would hopefully he's working on this offseason. He missed a few sacks. He would just run right past the quarterback. He needs to work on his lateral game a little bit, you know, getting his hips a little looser. I mean, he's super powerful. I mean, he can walk guys back to the quarterback. And remember, the kind of defense they played in Florida, you know, was a sit and read and react. And it took him time to get out of that habit. You know, if you're taught to just kind of sit there and read and react versus come across the ball, it takes some time. And I will tell you this, the second year when guys come back, I remember feeling that my second year, I was so much further ahead. My confidence was so much better because I knew what to do. Because here, the first year, you're trying to figure out to make sure what you're doing is right. The second year, now you're looking at your opponent. You know what to do now because you know the defense. So you're more kind of looking at formation, personnel, guy stances, a lot of that for defensive linemen. Offensive linemen will give you tells. They'll give you tells. And so will the backfield. Once you learn personnel and formations and all that stuff, it's just like a big jigsaw puzzle. Once you study it and you realize, that's when you have the advantage. That's when you see those great guys. Guys who have talent become great. And then there are some guys who have talent to never become great because they don't study. This is a mental game when you're in the National Football League. In college, you can overpower people. But in the pros, you're playing against the best of the best. So you have to learn all the different types of tendencies. And I really like what he did. And hopefully Pickens can pick it up too. No pun intended. But hopefully he can take it to another level too. Because, you know, when you pick two defensive tackles in the second or third round, and you got a good defensive line coach, they should make some headway this year.
So, all right, let me just... Did I hear you say that Jervon Dexter is going to become the next Akiem Hicks? Did I hear that, Al? Because I'd like to have heard that. I think I might have heard that. Did I hear that?
I says he has the potential. I said, if he works on his lateral, like moving side to side, I want to say I saw him miss four sacks last year. He ran right at the guy, and the guy just did a thing, and he ran right past him. So that tells me it's like, if I was him, I'd be like working on his lateral, you know, just sinking his hips a little bit as he's coming towards the quarterback, because he can run. He's got some, once he gets going, he moves. I would just work on his hips, you know, just sinking his hips a little bit as he's coming toward the quarterback, because quarterback's not going to just stand there. You know, they're going to move to the left or the right. And like I said, I want to say I saw him miss at least four sacks if he would have just, you know, geared down and made the play.
Yeah, I brought him up first because I think everybody saw it. He started to flash more and more consistently, and the Bears are in desperate need for it. I mean, do you still think that they need a three tech? If you're, you know, they didn't address it this offseason, you can't address everything. Do you think if you had to guess after this season, do you think they'll still be looking for a three tech? Or do you think, oh my, we'll be talking about Dexter on a whole nother level?
Too early to judge either way, but let me mention something to you about acquiring talent. And, you know, I put this down, and I got to look at my list here. The Chicago Bears, right? We're in 80. Everybody talks about the 85 Bears. Gary Fensick, right? One of the big stars. You know how the Bears got him? Free agent. Steve McMichaels, you know what he was? Free agent. Jay Hilgenberg, you know what he was? Free agent. Leslie Frazier, you know what he was? A free agent. Richard Dent, eighth round. Mark Bortz, a converted defensive tackle, eighth round. What am I saying? The Bears have to earn their money. If you really want to put together a Super Bowl team, you got to do it with undrafted free agents, because you don't have enough picks to do a Super Bowl team. Does that make sense? I mean, I forgot Dennis McKinnon in there. You got to hit on these free agents. You got to, you know, they picked a couple of defensive linemen in free agency. You got to see if you can find a Steve McMichaels in there. You don't know. You might find a Jay Hilgenberg type of guy in there on the offensive line. So that's where you make your money. If you got a really good coaching staff that can develop, you know, I heard the Bears offensive and defensive line coaches are really good. So if you can get those free agent guys or pick a guy up off waivers and develop them, that's going to form the championship team. There's just not enough draft picks to do it all.
Yeah, well, and they found one in Jack Sanborn. Hey, Al, we're going to bring in we got started late with you, so I want to – if you want to stick around, maybe you'll enjoy this conversation, throw in a couple questions too. Brian Griffin was Karan Amagaji's head football coach at Hinsdale Central, And he's joining us now here on the CHGO Bears podcast. Brian, I know we're a little bit late. Do you have time to talk right now, or do you got to get back to class?
I've got till 1:20, so I'm good.
You got till 1:20. All right. Let me take a deep breath here and let everybody know that before we talk to Brian, you want to elevate your performance with energy that hits the C4 performance energy. It powers explosive energy like Karan, who we'll see what Brian thinks he's going to be in the NFL. I'm guessing it's going to be good stuff here. 200 milligrams of caffeine provides enhanced endurance, and it's made with clinically studied ingredients. 0 grams of sugar or artificial colors. This is the good stuff. C4 performance energy. It fights muscular fatigue. Empowers enhanced muscular endurance with energy you can feel. I bet that, Al Harris would have been even better on the field if he had C4 back in the day. C4 Performance Energy is available in a wide variety of amazing sugar-free flavors, including the delicious collaborations of Grape Popsicle, Strawberry Starburst, and Orange Creamsicle. And also a shout out to our friends at Butcher Box. This is the high quality meat. This is the high quality seafood you can trust. 100% grass-fed beef, free-range organic chicken, port-raised, crate-free, wild-caught seafood. That's what you want. Humanely raised, no antibiotics, no added hormones. This is the good stuff. Again, we are keeping you healthy here at CHGO. Listen, there's great value, variety of the high-quality cuts, exclusive member deals, recipe inspiration, guides, tips, all the things. This is you want to get your Butcher Box on, and you want to do it with an amazing offer, which is free meat, plus $20 off your first box. Join today using our link, butcherbox.com/CHGO. Use the code CHGO to receive this exclusive offer before time runs out. Al, you want to stick around here?
Sure.
Okay, so Brian, welcome. Thank you for making time on a fun Friday here as we're having all sorts of offensive line now and defensive line talk, and we even peeked at the wide receivers. What did the Bears drafted Karan Amagaji? What do we got here?
Well, thanks for having me. This is awesome. Love always talking about the Bears. Love grew up here, so I just everything Chicago is awesome, and anytime you get the chance to talk about a former player is even better. So I think the Bears, I mean, they're excited. I'm really excited for them, both as his former coach, but also just as a Bears fan. He's an incredibly athletic kid, right? He's always been that. He's a late to the football game, right? So you have somebody who like really didn't even play football till his sophomore year of high school. And so all that other time he was playing basketball, and he was doing all the other things that improve athleticism that a lot of bigger kids, especially when they're young, just don't do. Right. They're trying to play catch up in that kind of athleticism range when they're just a big body, where he kind of went the other way, where he started athletic and then kind of has worked himself into his body. Right. And so I mean, I saw him a couple weeks ago when he stopped by the school a couple months ago. But I mean, just looks phenomenal, moves well. And I just think he's raw. Right. He's got a lot of work to do. But from high school through college, like, he's always been that kid, right? Like, even when Yale came in to recruit him, they were like, well, he's got the physical tools, but he's really raw, right? He hasn't played that much football. And he had two ways to go with that, right? You either get better or you get passed up. And like, clearly he got a lot better as he went through college. So I'm super pumped for the Bears that they made that choice.
So you might have missed the beginning of the show here, Brian, but Al was talking about when Jim Finks called him in 1979 to tell him he was going to be a Bear. Al's like, yeah, I don't know. I'm not that wild about going to this cold ass city I grew up in Hawaii going to high school. Like, what are you talking about? And I'm bringing that up because Karan's got a bunch of tweets out there when he was playing. Like, he said, fire the whole the Bears offensive line back in 2020. So, I like, as far as his maturity level, and look, he's a Bears fan. We were all saying the same stuff. There's no crime here. But I'm just curious, how you've seen him grow as a young man, getting to step into the NFL right now.
Right. And, we live in a different world. Who knows in 1980 what people would have been tweeting out, right? Before that, it's a different world we live in now. If everybody could get followed around all the time. But, he's just such a hardworking, smart, right? I think that's undervalued a lot. You know, I was fortunate. I'm a high school math teacher. I had him in AP calculus. So I got to see him out on the football field. I got to see him in the classroom. Like, he clearly went to Yale and did all right. Like, there's a part of him that both has the physical tools, but then also the mental maturity to know the effort he needs to put in and the time you need to put in to know what you're doing, right? Like, it's not high school football, it's not peewee, right? You need to put in the time inside the classroom and out on the field. And I think that's the kind of person they got.
Do you see him better as a tackle or as a guard, Brian?
I think athleticism and length, like I would see him as a tackle. Like, he played tackle for us. He played tackle, you know, obviously high school is different. You take your biggest kid and you put him there, whether they're that big or not. But, you know, they all talked about his arm length, right? And I remember every college coach coming in and putting his arms up against the whiteboard and measuring them. And, like, I mean, 7'2", 7'3", whatever his wingspan is, like, that sort of length on the outside, I think that's where he belongs. But I also think he's athletic enough to, if they needed him to do something else, I think he'll work into whatever role is needed.
Al, putting you on the spot. Any questions here for Brian on Caron? Did you like the pick?
Yeah, I did. Brian, I was going to ask you a couple of things, you know, being a former defensive end. One of the things that I would do if I saw Brian at first, Caron at first, sorry.
If you saw me, I'd be running the other way. So, no, don't
worry about it. All right. So if I saw him at first, one of the big things I would test him on is a bull rush. How is he thinking as far as thinking his hips?
Yeah, and again, you know, I haven't coached him for 4 years, right? Like, but I think what got him to the place he's at now is that, again, that athleticism. He didn't spend, you know, all these years, like, just playing peewee line and just, like, standing there, like, he was playing basketball. And now you're standing up, right? You're standing straight up. You're not getting the bend that we're looking for. But I'm sure he has areas in that regards that he has to work on. But from – I think he has the athleticism to get to where he needs to get in that bend. The coaches at Yale talk, I mean, he went from not being that strong, right, to, like, being the strongest guy they had, you know? And so he'll, if there's a deficiency there, I know he'll work through that deficiency, and he has that foundation to do it. But yeah, you know, that's what you worry about, right? I mean, he is what's he listed at, 325, 330. I mean, he's got the weight and the size. He's just, if he can get the bend down, I think he'll be all right.
Is he mean enough? Does he have the mean thing? Because I, you know, we got Gentleman Al here, but he was, whenever he got on the football field, you had what you ever needed to do out there. Does he have that switch?
Yeah, and honestly, coming out of high school, that was the thing that made some bigger programs nervous. Cause, like, normally, right, you have a 6'5", 280-pound athletic offensive lineman in high school, like, people are asking, right? Like, that's just the world we live in. They find him. And his recruiting process was a little slow, and some of it was experience, but some of it was, like, concerns about that, like, that knowing what it takes in the trenches on a football field to grind it out. And I think just watching him play in college and talking with him, that's probably, aside from, like, learning the game and the physical, all the strength and all that, his ability or his desire to just, like, dominate the guy across from him, it is super evident when you talk to him. And that was not something that, as a senior in high school, and again, you're 18 years old, right, you're trying to figure that out, that he had figured out yet. Like, we wanted him to. We talked to him all the time. Like, as soon as you figure out how to dominate, like, the sky's the limit. And I, like, talking again to the Yale coaches after he was there and all that, that is, he has that desire, and he thinks he's better, right? He's gotten better, and he's put in the work to be better. So he thinks he's better. And then his goal is to dominate you. And so I think he's grown a ton and matured a ton in that aspect.
Brian, I wanted to ask you this. He's a very confident kid, and it kind of made me crack up a little bit with a good smile when he talked about Caleb doesn't have to worry about getting touched. I thought, okay, young fella, you haven't been in the NFL. Everybody gets touched. So how is he going to handle when he gets beat? Because that happens to the best of them. How do you think he's going to recover from that? Because it's going to be a revelation for him.
Right, absolutely. And I think part of that too, you know, it's that fine line, right? That you're talking about, like that you want confidence, right? You want someone to believe that they can beat you. Even like, you know, you said, if you saw me, like, I might believe I could beat you. You run me right over, but I can, like, that's half of it. You need the physical aspect to back it up. And then you need confidence. And then the third piece, right, is that you then need to be able to reframe and take one play at a time and move on to the next one, right? Like, that's a huge part of football that people, I think, underestimate. And, you know, from the first day he started as a sophomore, right? He came in and he never really played football, and he kept coming back and kept coming back and kept coming, because he got beat a lot when he started, because there were kids with a lot of experience and he had none. And then by his senior year, again, he just kept coming back. And again, he's matured as a player and as a person every step of the way up until this point. And I think he has that great balance of confidence, but then next play mentality. That, like, hey, I, you know, you're not going to get them all. You're going to make a mistake. Someone's going to beat you. And then you have to come back and find that confidence again. Because if you don't have it to start, you're not going to, like, manufacture it somewhere in there, right? And I think he's got that balance. Because he's still got a lot of, I mean, we know he's got a lot of growing to do, right? I mean, the NFL is a whole different animal. And I think he knows that. But, you know, you either come in swinging or you come in like getting run over. And I think he's ready to come in swinging.
Last one here, Brian. What can you just tell us real quickly about the family? I love to know parents. We got a Boris. We got a Ghislaine. We got an interesting journey here. Played soccer in France. He was born in Togo. I don't know where Togo is, but I'm sure that's an amazing place to grow up. At least I hope it was for Boris. What do you know about the peas that got him to this point? Let's throw some parental credit out on a Friday.
Yeah, and you know, his parents, his family is about doing things well and doing everything you do well. And so, like, the standard was high academically, athletically. Like, you playing football is an excuse to let your grades slip is an excuse to let any, like, you do it all, and you do it all well and to the best of your ability. And, you know, he probably won't like this, but I, you know, the Yale coaches talked about, like, you know, his grades started slipping one year, and mom was in there, like, the next week being like, hey, listen, I don't care if you're a college football player, you're coming home if you don't figure this out. And then, you know, of course he got that on. And I think, you know, again, in that maturing process, especially when your family is so supportive like they are, is you learn that, right? And so at some point, you know, as a parent, me too, like at some point you're on top pushing your kids and making those decisions for them. And at some point they absorb that and it becomes their mentality. And I, you know, he's done that. And now it's him, and that's the standard he holds himself to, you know, and that comes directly from the parents, is he holds himself to an incredibly high standard in everything he does. And again, those are those intangible things that you can't really count and put on a piece of paper, but I think lead to ultimate success for a lot of people, right? And what that looks like for the Bears hopefully is starting and making a huge impact.
And by the way, I knew that Togo was in West Africa, right next to Ghana. Anybody who thinks that I didn't know that, you're wrong. Karm geography, I'm on top of this stuff. Al, you got anything else for Brian? And Brian, I really appreciate you making time in the middle of your work day.
Yeah, absolutely. You guys are awesome.
Yeah, hey, thanks so much, Brian. We'll be watching your guy. And okay, actually, I got one more. He hits his ceiling. Is he a star? Let's go there. I'm assuming you're going to say yes, but go ahead. I want to hear you lean into how good Karan can be, and that you two, maybe one day you'll be meeting him in Canton. Let's go all the way. Let's go Hall of Fame, damn it.
Hey, listen, and this is when he left high school, right? He was super raw. And like, again, as a college athlete, he wasn't ready to be a college athlete just because he didn't have the experience or the strength. And we all sat there in the office and we said, listen, if he puts in the work and he puts in the time, he's going to be called on during the draft. Like that's how athletic and the tools he has. And again, for a kid like that to like embrace that and go with it, you know, it's a 1 in a million chance or 1 in 2 billion chance, whatever. But I think he has all of that foundational tools to make it happen. So hell yeah, let's go. Let's make it. Like, I think the sky's the limit for anybody if everything lines up. But you know, it takes a million things to line up. So yes, I'm going with, I think he could be a star. I think he could be a 10-year offensive tackle for the Bears and get us some Super Bowl wins, which would be some fun.
Caleb will never get touched, or when he does, he'll bounce right back. Hey, Brian, thanks so much for making time, man. I appreciate it.
Okay, you guys are awesome. Thank you so much for your time.
We appreciate it, I should say. Al, great questions, man. Thanks, Brian. That was a little peek at Karan Amagaju. We're going to talk to his Yale coach, too, next week. So just doing, obviously, a deep dive on all the Bears draft picks here as we wait for the Bears to get back on the field here. Did you liked that pick, huh? You at that point in the draft?
I did, because the Bears need depth at tackle. And that's one of the things I was, I kind of felt they were going to get it, because I've learned this about Ryan Poles. When he says something, I listen, because he does what he says. I mean, if he mentions something, like he was mentioning the depth and offensive line, this year in the draft, and his eyes kind of lit up. I go, oh, he's going to draft a lineman. I didn't know when, but I felt he's going to draft that offensive tackle in particular, because they need depth at offensive tackle. And I think, you know, they just need to get stronger there on offensive line overall. I think the big key this year for the Bears and for any team is coaching and health. Coaching and health. Can they develop these second-year guys? You know, the last couple of years, they drafted a bunch of people on both sides of the ball. Can they develop them to be, you know, a Dave Durson or a Richard Dent or a Jay Hilgenberg? Can they develop them to be Pro Bowlers or maybe Hall of Famers, you know? And I that's the thing I'm looking at, and just seeing how they mature, how they develop. Young linemen like him, you can't teach athleticism, right? So that's a great plus for him. He also has a mean streak. That's a great plus. He has confidence. That's a great plus. So you also have to be able to deal with adversity. And I think, you know, when things don't go well for you, I know they talked about Caleb. Can he handle it when things don't go well for him? Well, you know, I what I've seen, I watched him a lot being out here on the West Coast. And that's a competitive dude, man. And let me bring this up real quick. Mentality is so important. And I want to give you a quick story if you have a second.
Go ahead.
When I first came to the Bears, we went to the playoffs my first year. And then the next two or three years, we were pretty bad. And so I was a young player, and I remember one day walking by the locker room on the offensive side of the ball by the lineman, and I'm not going to mention the lineman's names, but we were playing Minnesota. And we would lose to Minnesota every year. And so I was a young player. I wasn't used to it. So I just happened to be walking by, and I heard a couple of linemen said, man, every time we play Minnesota, they always come back to beat us, man. They block a kick, or they get an interception, or they get a fumble recovery. And I got incensed at that. And I said, why don't you guys just stay home? Don't even go to the game, because we're going to play in Minnesota. Because there's a mentality, and that's what people need to understand. There's a mentality, and I think the Bears believe they can beat Detroit. You could tell they believe they could beat Detroit. The thing is, I saw with Green Bay, you know, they coached scared and they played scared against Green Bay. I mean, especially the first game, because I came out to the first game. The defense played better the second game because, you know, sweat gave them a lot of confidence. But the thing I like about this year, I like Caleb's confidence. I like, you know, there's a bunch of guys there haven't been beat by Green Bay. You know what I mean? They don't have that mentality. And I think you have to get over that mentality. You have to believe you can beat a team before you beat them. And I like that they got a Keenan Allen in there. I like that they got a Dunze. I like that they got all these guys who aren't you know, beat up by being beat up by Green Bay. And so I think that's going to be important, because Green Bay is going to be a tough team now. Matter of fact, I wouldn't be surprised they're better than Detroit this year. They have made some really good picks. And if you look at the way their personnel people have drafted, they've done well. So I think it's very important to get guys that have really good confidence on the offensive side of the ball, that they can get past that mental hang up, if that makes sense.
Yeah, 100%. And it takes me right to, do you think the Bears have the right head coach in Matt Eberflus, Al? Where are you at on the Flus?
You know, I'm going to give him another shot. I love his attitude, you know, as far as he's a very positive person. you know, the defense, once he took over the defense played exceptional. And he's obviously a good defensive coach. Every place he's went, he's been a really good defensive coach. I just want to see what happens. Now he's got offensive side of the football. So, you know, I'm not going to judge him for that right now because they obviously didn't have much talent on the offensive side of the ball. I think, you know, obviously he saved his job by ending up coaching the defense. It kind of, he kind of fell into that because the defense coordinator had to leave early. But those guys believe in him, you know, and that's what we have with Buddy Ryan. You know, when you get your defense to believe in you, that's half the victory right there. So obviously his defense believes in him. And he made some changes on the offensive side of the ball, which I felt they needed to do. I felt that they didn't have the experience on the offensive side of the ball coaching-wise. So hopefully we'll see what happens with this new coaching staff. I'm believing that they will have the answers that the other coaching staff didn't have. So I think I like Eberflus. I mean, we just have to see what happens this year, but I think they're going to do well. I really do. I'd be surprised if they didn't do well.
Jonathan Thompson in the chats here, Al. We'll throw a couple up here as we wrap up the show here. Jonathan Thompson, any comments on Keith Randolph, the defensive tackle at Illinois? I don't know how much you had to watch the Illini this year.
I didn't really get to watch them live at all. I saw some tape on him. They had a very good defensive line. I saw some good penetration on him. And that's the kind of person I'm talking about. Can you develop a guy like that? You know, he seems to have a good body. At least I don't know that much about him yet. But those are the kind of guys that, first of all, if they have the physical talent and they have the mentality to learn, to be humble, to work hard, they always have a chance. And so what little I saw of him, I liked. But those are the type of guys that I said is, can you find another Steve McMichaels in there? You know, Can you find another free agent kind of guy that, you know, a Jay Hilgenberg, Les Frazier's of the world? You know, maybe he can be one of those guys. And that's the part of, that completes your team. So I think Poles has done outstanding job, outstanding. And, you know, one of the best GMs that we've had, obviously. So now, you know, it's on paper. Now they got to go to work.
Echo Bean's got Trey Hendrickson from the Bengals. I think some other people might have had that too. That's a name that's out there, Al. I mean, I don't know what it's going to cost, and he's obviously expensive, but you do need someone to pair with Montez too to really, at least you would think, you know, transform the defense to an elite level.
Yeah, that's interesting because Cincinnati, they got to sign. I don't know if they can sign all those guys because they got two receivers they have to sign, right? I think T. Higgins and what's the other guys? Jamar Chase.
Yeah.
So they still got to sign those two guys and this other guy. That might be tough with Burrow on the payroll. And that's why you want to have the flexibility on your payroll with the Bears that you can maybe make a pick like that. Maybe is he a free agent? I don't know that much about him. But is he a free agent? His salary. I know a lot about him as a player, but his salary situation.
No, they got it. Henderson, they got to trade for. And, you know, who knows how much it would cost to get him. I mean, I'm seeing people saying it would cost a ton. I'm not sure because, you know, could you get
much more sweat?
Could you get him for one of your second round picks next year? Let's say that. Start it with the package built around that.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, maybe you can get him for a Montez Sweat type of payment. I mean, that'd be nice. I mean, I would take him with a number two. I mean, that would be really nice. So that's what I'm saying is that it gives you the flexibility to do something like that if you can control your payroll. And that's why I was mentioned about staggering your receiver accumulation as far as, you know, every 4 years or something, 3 or 4 years, if you can get another really good receiver in there, because you're probably not going to be able to pay everyone. I think the receivers are going, what, $30 million a year now or something ridiculous like that?
Top of the market, yep, no doubt.
Yeah, so that's how you have to manage it.
Yeah, well, right, and which is why during Caleb's rookie contract, you have a built-in advantage, but the Bears' cap space has shrunk dramatically now with the number one pick and the number nine pick. So if they were going to bring Hendrickson in, who's on the last year of his contract, they'd have to get somewhat creative to do it. I'm not a capologist, so I'm not going to go down that road at 111 on a Friday. I'm sure it can be done. And Gary Ross, of course, is putting, he's going to be 30 this year. So there's, you know, he's, you're getting a vet, pure vet. Go ahead.
You know, Mark, the other thing too is the Bears made a lot of great picks this year. You have to walk before you can run. To me, is if they can go in the playoffs and be competitive, you know, I'm not expecting a Super Bowl out of them this year. I think, you know, if they can get in the playoffs, that's a big step. And I think they're a draft away, to be honest with you, you know, as far as getting their team fully like they can compete with anyone. I think they still have some holes, I think a little bit on offense and defensive lines. So I'd like to see them get a little stronger on both sides of football there. I think they're a lot better, but I think there's still some holes, and you can't do it all at one time. And Poles, I will tell you this, what I love about Poles' draft. The quarterback is a lot harder to keep the confidence of the quarterback than it is the defense. I know some people wanted a defensive player drafted at number 9. I was full force for putting as many people around Caleb Williams to be successful as possible because, I mean, look at the Bears' defense, how it changed. I mean, it was not very good. Then Montez Sweat comes in. All of a sudden, they're a totally different defense. You can't do that on offense. You know, you just can't bring a quarterback in and say, oh, go ahead. You know, you have to have the confidence. And I think them drafting offensive linemen, drafting receivers, even a punter. I mean, if that punter punts like he did in college, that's a weapon. Because, first of all, he's going to get you out of trouble, right? If you're on your own 20, I think I saw him punting 70-yard punts or something ridiculous. And then he could pin people down like, you know, someone doing a golf shot, bringing it up to the green with a chip shot. I mean, if you have someone doing that, now I loved it as a defender if we had someone inside the 10-yard line because we could be a lot more aggressive. And the offense can't be nearly as aggressive. They have to be a lot more tentative when they're backed up. So I just love his picks all the way around. And, yeah, defensively, could they have used the edge? Sure. Hopefully this kid Booker can come out and give them some specialized pass rushing. Hopefully they find a free agent that we don't really know much about. You know, so we have to see how that plays out. But my big hope for them, I'm not looking for Super Bowl this year. I'm kind of looking more for getting in the playoffs. They should get in the playoffs. If they don't get in the playoffs, that's going to be really disappointing because they have more than enough talent. And they got the probably outside of the AFC North, they probably have the toughest division in football.
Yeah, I mean, you can almost make an argument that we'll see. But if teams hit their potential, the NFC North could be the best division in football. Hey, Al, this was awesome. People loved you. And I look forward to having you back on the last out here, 6 minutes before the Cubbies start. I know people are fired up for the Cubs and Brewers today, and shout out the Lakers firing Darvin Ham. Are you kidding me? Darvin Ham did as good of a job as he could have done this year, but that story for another time. I'm giving you three options. Give me one Jim McMahon, one Walter Payton, or one Dan Hampton story on the way out here that you could share from your days playing at good old Soldier Field, which hopefully the Bears will stay at, damn it.
Jim McMahon, Walter Payton, or Dan Hampton?
Or you can, or off the board, any which way you want to go. Just give me a story from your playing days, locker room, practice, anything.
Oh, okay. I'll give you a quick story about Walter. All right, so, you know, we were never allowed to hit Walter. And, you know, Walter was just, he was the greatest runner, you know, to me, he's the greatest football player ever. Yes, I'm biased, but hey, it is what it is. And so I always wanted to play against the best players, you know, because it was a measurement. I wanted to see how I measured up against the great players. And so Walter, in the offseason, during the strike, we were trying to figure out, you know, some workout places. And Walter and I both lived in the Arlington Heights area. So Walter wanted me to train with him. And so I had never trained with Walter before. So we trained at Buffalo Grove High School. And so, you know, obviously Walter's, I was really fast for my size, but obviously Walter's faster than me. So we're running all kinds of sprints and stuff. We're doing all this workout. And I mean, I'm hanging with him. I mean, I'm behind him, but I'm not embarrassingly behind him, right? And we're doing all these agility drills, sprints, all kinds of stuff. So afterwards, you know, the drill's over and I'm literally laid out on the field and spread eagle just, I mean, I've exhausted every bone in my body. And all of a sudden he goes, okay, now we're going to the hill. I go, the what? What are you talking about? We're going to the hill. So there was a hill near Buffalo Grove High School where Walt used to work out. And I'm sure in old videos, people have seen it. And so I go to this hill and I didn't bring any cleats, thank goodness. So Walter goes, okay, you can't run the hill because you don't have cleats on. Go stand at the top of the hill. This guy is going up and down this hill like a machine. He's running up front ways. He's going up backwards, you know, like a defensive back would go up. And I mean, he's like a machine. And I just went, wow. Now I know why this guy's the greatest player ever. His not only his work ethic, but the guy's energy, he never stopped. He was always wound up. Michael Jordan, I heard, was like that, you know, that his energy, it's not just athleticism, but do you have the energy to keep going at top speed like that? And that was the only time I worked out with Walter.
So, one and done.
Yeah, buddy. I said, he's in a different level than I am. But, you know, he to me, he was the greatest player ever and great teammate.
Yeah.
Great teammate. Funny, do a lot of pranks, everything.
Well, and you mentioned Mike. I mean, him and Mike were friends. They would, you know, I'm friends with Jared, and he's Jared, by the way, is friends with everybody. He's just the nicest, easiest, greatest guy going. But he would be, you know,
when he was in diapers.
Yeah. So, and Jared would like answer the, like the, Walter be downstairs in the basement hanging out and the doorbell would ring. Go answer it, Jared. And he'd go up there to, you know, he opened the door. Oh, it's Michael. I mean, that was that kid's life. And then they would, you know, they'd be shooting pool down there or whatever else. They were buddies. So anyway, that was what an era it was.
We were blessed during that era, you know, two of the greatest sports figures, you know, him and Michael Jordan. And I wish Walter could have had more than one championship. You know, he was phenomenal.
Yeah.
Just an honor to play with a guy like that.
Yeah. Well, Al, it's an honor to have you on, my friend. Well, I look forward to doing it again. And our crew, I hope you get it, you know, get an opportunity to bring you on with everybody else here. So I'm not the only one talking to you, but, you were awesome today, as I knew you would be, Al. So thanks so much.
Thanks, guys. I'd love to be on the show again. It's very enjoyable. And at market, you know, it's just, I feel at home just shooting the shoot with you. And I love watching the show, you know, being out here in Arizona. So it kind of keeps me up on Chicago news, Chicago sports.
Well, and just a history story I should tell. Al and I used to work out at the same health club. And Al and I were, not to get too personal here, but we were in the steam room together back whatever year it was when Randy Moss was on the clock. And we're sitting there like, who do you think the Bears should take? And Al was like, I'm telling you, if they can get their hands on Randy Moss, that guy is going to be a star. And I'm like, Randy Moss, the Marshall guy? What are you talking about? Like, Al Harris played in the league, but he doesn't know ball. And of course, one of the greatest wide receivers to ever play the game. You nailed it back then. So,
well, that wasn't rocket science.
Yeah, I know.
Just the kind of player he was. But yeah, I appreciate that little pat on the back there, but. Yeah. Well, you know, hopefully Odunze turns out to be a Hall of Fame receiver. So we'll see.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for watching, everybody. Steven, thanks for producing. Appreciate everybody. And we're back on Monday at noon. Have a safe, productive, fun, all of it. Get your dreams on weekend. We will see you Monday at noon. Thanks for watching CHGO Bears.
We all silly like the mayor.
Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miro Board. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miro Board?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online at the same time.
Correct. Next. You need the team to act on feedback fast, so you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks instantly.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into five themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people running actually enjoyable and actionable retros in Miro. Get your first three boards free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.